BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Our next guest, good friend of mine, known him for a long time, respect his work tremendously, covers college football, terrific reporter, the guy that is the co-host of a videocast slash podcast called Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, or videocast. You can find it on YouTube if you haven't found it already. We got an episode that is in the process of being posted today. Some of our rapid reaction to the college football playoff rankings, the schedule of the Pac-12 teams, our big games of the week, and some hot seat talk about Lincoln Riley and Brett Brennan, two coaches at USC and Arizona who are under a little bit of fire, a little bit of heat on their seat, so to speak. John Wilner from the Bay Area joining us now. Let's start with old Lincoln Riley. Can we start there? I mean, you don't have to give away everything you gave away in the podcast, but how much trouble is Lincoln Riley in at USC?
You know, we recorded that podcast, about 4 or 5 hours ago. I've already forgotten what I said. That's kind of how
perfect
how my mind works. I think the bottom line is this is their big season, their first season in the Big Ten, and they're 2-5 in conference play, and they've blown fourth quarter leads in every one of those five games. And USC fans are basically pulling their hair out because last year wasn't very good either. And so you're talking about back-to-back years of far below expectations at that program. You add the Big Ten element to it. And, there's some pretty upset folks. Whether they actually make a change, that I don't know. You know, it's hard, that's hard to predict, but man, USC fans have a right to be pretty upset, I'd say.
The money involved in college sports now is interesting because on one hand, the coaches are making more than ever, and Lincoln Riley with this 10-year, $120 million deal, whatever that was, you know, it looks like there's about $88 million left on the deal if they wanted to fire him now. On the other hand, the media rights money, $70 million, $65 million a year in the Big Ten, that distribution's a large number. You know, at what point does it become prohibitive for USC to make a move on Riley? Or what do you think the math is there?
Well, it's not just his 88, even if it's 75 or 70, it's not just his buyout, right? It's also the coaching staff. And I assume a bunch of their guys have multi-year contracts. And then it's the money you got to put out for your new coach and your new staff. So the transition, all told, is, you know, well in excess of a $500 million commitment. USC's got a lot of money. I don't know if they have that much money, especially when, you know, now we're in this revenue-sharing era, and they're going to have to share $20 million a year with their players, probably starting next season. And you cannot continue to go to your donors and ask for money to buy out the coach, and money for revenue sharing, and money for this facility and that facility. Donor fatigue is a real thing, and so I don't know if they've got enough money to handle his buyout now. I also don't know how much it drops next year. Next year would be his fourth season. Is it go down in equal increments? I don't know, but they certainly are going to have to look into that if things continue to go sideways.
And you're hitting on one of the things I think that's important to know, that USC is a private institution. The Lincoln Riley's contract's not out there, out there for public consumption anyway. Is there a way to salvage this season for Riley, or, you know, can USC justify, hey, all these games are one-score games? It's not like they're getting blown off the field. I don't know if I see that positively or negatively, though.
True. It's perplexing that it keeps happening. Different details, but same story. If they beat Nebraska, and they should, Nebraska's lost a few in a row. Nebraska just lost at home to UCLA. So if they can beat Nebraska, and then they finish and beat their two rivals, UCLA and Notre Dame, back-to-back, I think he'll be fine. You know, 7-5, there'd be a lot of pressure on him for next year. But, you know, 7-5 with wins over Notre Dame and UCLA to finish the season, I think he'd be okay. You know, on the other hand, if they beat Nebraska and then lose those last two and they finish 5-7 with losses to the Bruins and the Irish, then I don't know. They may have a tough decision to make.
John Wilner with us. I want to pivot a little bit with coaching salaries and contracts to Jake Dickert at Washington State. His team comes up in this initial ranking of the college football playoff at number 21. They have an 11-1 season in front of them if they win the games they should. Dickert got an extension in early 2023 that now runs through the end of the 2027 season. But Washington State's got a tricky sort of dynamic with the Board of Trustees recently being asked by the university and the athletic department, like, you know, we had a financial crisis. They owed money they didn't know they owed. There was a, you know, just a big financial mess. Is this the right time for Kirk Schultz and Ann McCoy, the president and the AD, to go and say, hey, we want to extend Jake Dickert for, you know, 9 years, 10 years. We want to give him this lifetime deal that he wants. Or do they run up against having to be tactful there with the trustees and the regents?
Well, that's a question that, you know, there's a lot of schools in that that have that question to kind of weigh, is to essentially double down with a coach who's been successful because you don't want to lose them, and make a big financial commitment. And I'm not sure what Washington State should do. I think Dickert, you know, if they finish 11-1, could there be interest in Dickert? Yes. I think that maybe not the same level of interest as if they were had a really good season in the Pac-12, though. A lot of schools in the power conferences will look and say, yeah, he was 11-1. He's a good coach, but it was 11-1 against what's basically a Mountain West schedule. And that could kind of temper the interest in him. I don't know that Washington State should necessarily make a proactive move with a long-term offer until they're sure that Dickert's got a deal that he would take. Now, the agents, as you said, manipulate these situations. So it is going to be tricky for Washington State. They got to do everything they can, but I don't know that you mortgage the future, you know, and really put yourself in a leverage situation financially unless you got to. And they need to do their best to figure out if they actually have that dilemma to deal with.
He's talked about wanting to coach 10 years, and I said this on yesterday's show.
Yeah.
I thought maybe the move is, you know, they don't give him a big raise, but they say to him, we're going to give you the Mike Riley deal. You win 6 games. Every time you win 6, we add another year automatically to your deal. And I think you might be able to sneak that one by the trustees, so to speak, because it's an amendment to a current deal. It's not restructuring and adding a bunch of money to the deal.
No, that's a good way to do it. I think Tad Boyle, the basketball coach of Colorado, has something similar with 20 win seasons. But that's definitely an option. You know, I do wonder, he's a Midwest guy. I want to say he's from Wisconsin. At least he went to school there.
Wisconsin, yeah.
So if you're Washington State, if you're Ann McCoy, you got to be paying close attention to what's going on in the Big Ten with the mid-level programs, which ones might have a vacancy, and try to be one step ahead of this whole thing, right? And that's going to be tricky. And you got to, I don't know what kind of relationship they have with Dickert's agent, but the agents run the show. If you were doing an NCAA tournament of college football, I know I'm cross-referencing here, but an NCAA tournament of college football entities, right? Like, the number one seeds are ESPN, Fox is one, Realignment's one, agents is one, right? And I don't even know, I guess lawyers would be the fourth. But agents have such an enormous impact on the sport. I mean, just look at how many coaches got $10 million deal year deals from Jimmy Sexton as a result of the Nick Saban trickle-down situation. So it's tough deal for Ann McCoy. She's got to navigate.
The initial rankings come out. CFP selection committee likes Oregon and Ohio State in front of Georgia. Boise State at 12. BYU in there. I mean, there's some new faces in there. But what was your initial takeaway as you saw the rankings being revealed?
Initial takeaway, one, you know, Oregon was the clear pick for number one, the easy pick for the committee. Not only do the Ducks make sense at number one, but the committee's not boxing themselves in any way, shape, or form with that positioning. And then I looked, the first thing I looked at was to tally up how many SEC and Big Ten teams there were in the top 12. And there's eight. And that makes a lot of sense. And to have two-thirds of the playoff field be from those two conferences, I think is something that fans need to get used to and anticipate for many years, because that's what's happening here with this whole new world order in college football, is those two conferences are going to run the sport. And if they don't get what they want, they're going to change the rules so that it works for them. And then I looked, certainly at Boise's position, which is good for them. I thought Washington State, 21, good and bad. Good that they're ranked and relevant, which I know you talked about on the podcast. But, man, if you're looking at Washington State trying to climb into the top 12 eventually, boy, they probably would have liked to have been 18th or 19th. They got a long road with all those teams ahead of them.
Yeah, and I think, too, they're going to have to win out, but they're going to need some help. They're going to need Texas Tech. Washington goes to Penn State and pulls off a major upset. Suddenly the Washington win looks much better. You know, they're going to need a couple of things like that to happen. And, you know, but what do you make of kind of the last month of the season? Do you think we're going to get some chaos? Do you think we'll get three or four teams, five teams that aren't in the top 12 that end up in the top 12? How much turnover and churn will there be in your mind as these rankings come out each week?
It's hard to predict because this is such a new world order, not only with the 12-team playoff, but also with the gigantic conferences. I mean, I think that one of the potential spots for chaos is the conference tiebreaker policies for getting into the championship games. You know, if you got two teams or three teams tied for second place and they didn't play each other, then you're going to have potentially a problem. So that's one area where we're in uncharted territory. I certainly think that there'll be, a standard number of upsets for sure. And exactly how the committee, I don't want to say kowtows to the Big Ten and the SEC with the playoff rankings, but, you know, certainly accommodates those two conferences is another aspect that we need to pay attention to. Because bottom line is, with 12 teams getting into the playoff, there are more teams and more games that matter for the postseason. And that just creates a greater chance of something crazy happening. If you got more teams involved, better chance something is going to happen we don't expect.
The Ohio State, Oregon at the top, Georgia behind them. Like, sort of think, Wilner, if Georgia played those teams, they would be favored in that game. Does the SEC have a beef there, or do the results on the field ultimately carry the day when it comes to the playoff rankings?
Well, hopefully the results will carry the day, and there won't be too much brand bias, but there probably will be some. I would imagine the SEC would have preferred Georgia to be second, but I also assume that they don't think it's a huge deal for being the first rankings. I agree with you. If Georgia played Oregon and Ohio State on a neutral field, I think Georgia would be a slight favorite, you know, 1, 2, 2.5 points, something like that. But, you know, they'll be fine. They went out. I mean, Georgia could afford a loss, and they'll still be fine. The question is going to be, would any three-loss SEC team get in? For instance, Alabama loses at LSU this weekend, but then wins out. Alabama's 9-3 with a win over Georgia. Do they get in the playoff? I mean, you know the SEC hype machine will be at full force on ESPN those last couple weeks for Bama, but it'll be interesting to see how the committee responds.
John Wilner with us. We are talking college football. You can find his work at wilnerhotline.com. writing at the Bay Area News Group. Wilner, you know, I'm looking at Washington's season, and they're going to Penn State this week. It's a wideout. It feels like, and I initially saw that game on the schedule and went, oh, man, that is going to be an ambush. They're in for it there. But now I'm kind of wondering how the loss to Ohio State will play in the psyche of Penn State. Are they fractured? Are they distracted? Will there be a letdown? How do you sort of read Washington going to Penn State?
I think it's the best opportunity possible for Washington. You know, if you're going to pick any week of the season to go to Happy Valley, this is the week. Because win or lose against Ohio State, Penn State was going to have a hangover, I think, this week. Now, it might work to Penn State's advantage for it to be a night game, a whiteout game. That'll get their energy up as opposed to, say, playing at noon. But if I'm Washington, I am delighted with the way this has turned out because you're catching them after an absolute gut punch loss to Ohio State. So whether Washington can execute well enough, that's a whole other matter. But if you're for circumstances, it's as good as it could have gotten for the Huskies.
I am left thinking about how many teams you believe could get to the title game. When the rankings come out, I thought ESPN did a nice job kind of explaining how the seedings work and all that. But how many teams do you really realistically think can look at the bracket and go, we could get to the title game? Not win it, but we could get there.
Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon for sure. Getting to the title game means you got to win that semifinal, right? So there's four teams left. Who's good enough to win those semifinal games? And to me, it's a very short list. Probably Texas. I don't think Miami, for instance, or Indiana, Penn State, BYU. I don't think any of those teams can win a semifinal game against Oregon, Ohio State, or Georgia, put it that way. Probably Texas I'd include in there. That's about it. Alabama is a different deal. They have the players, but they gotta make a lot of progress on the field on both sides of the ball. But if you're just looking at who can line up with the offensive and defensive lines capable of beating that top tier, I don't know that there's very many teams.
I'm also left kind of looking at Boise State and saying, gosh, if they can become the four seed that gets them that first round bye, they would be a potentially a really tough matchup for somebody in that second round that wasn't a conference champion or somebody coming into that game. You know, what's the ceiling for Boise State in your mind? And let's just assume Ashton Gentry's healthy and 100%.
I think there's a great chance that Boise State can win out and actually leapfrog the Big 12 champion, which would, make the Broncos the number four seed and give them an opening round bye. So their first game in the playoff would be a quarterfinal matchup against the winner, right? The four is going to play the 5-12 winner. So that five is probably the SEC or Big Ten runner-up. So that means Boise is playing a neutral field game against, basically against Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, or Oregon, is what I would think. And that's a tough, tough order for them. But if they don't get to the four seed, then they're going to be they're probably 12. They could be 12, which means they're playing the five. They need to get into the sweet spot, which is like that 10 range for them. If they're the 10 and they play and they're below the Big 12 champ, they play the 7, then they advance and play the 2, maybe it's a little bit different, but that 4-5 matchup for them would be awfully hard.
John Wilner, find him at WilnerHotline.com. Wilner, thank you, man. I'll catch you down the road. I'll see you in Salt Lake City. Bye. Man, we're going to the Holy War.
That's right. Should be fun and cold. Thanks, my friend.
All right. There he goes. We'll be in Salt Lake City. We'll have you covered there. All new episode of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast/videocast is on the YouTube channel now. Give it a look. We talk about some of the stuff in greater depth. Coming up, Punch It Audio, Trent Bray, Oregon State football coach in the 5 o'clock hour. Stay away from that Halloween candy. We'll be right back.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit MedMutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.